I've removed the lectern. Hopefully that means this is a disadvantage on the left. You can still see the screen. I'll try and... Can you see the screen now?
Yeah, okay.
If I had given the extraordinary comprehensiveness of Saul's talk on the economic matters, and given that the treasurer is speaking at lunch, I think I'll have less politics and more international economics, particularly on the question of how we got in this mess. I think this is not like any other disturbance the world has faced, or that Australia has faced. So how we got into this mess is pretty relevant. It isn't as if we've had a 1961 or 87 type recession where normal fiscal policy would do the trick. I'm going to argue that, you know, what's happened in financial markets reflects a disjoint state between the finance profession, if you like, and the economics profession. That those who really have been inventing these derivatives and devices have had little understanding of classical economics, and those who have been managing our economies have had very little understanding of the detailed financial instrument. I've worked at the Reserve Bank and the Fed and the IMF and Prime Minister's Department for that matter. And one thing I can guarantee you, which we verified at a Board of Governors meeting at CEDA, where we had the odd Prime Minister, Governor, several bank directors, is that most people who've been managing the banks have not understood what's been in the financial packages that have been a product of securitization. The very process of diversification, you know, putting together Russian nuclear investments with Tasmanian hydro, you get an average return, but you've got offsetting risks. The problem is that the synthetic security is not clear, not even to bankers. It disturbs me greatly that I know plenty of governors and central bank advisors and that vary from Israel to New Zealand. Governors are totally at a loss to understand how they missed what went on in this bus. So that's what my slides are about today. There's a bit more content than can properly be covered in 20 minutes. I'm sure that the website from CEDA will be able to give you your own copy if you wish to peruse that. So one, how do we get into the mess? Two, I want to talk about financial derivatives in the global capital market. Three, I want to graph what's happening in the world economy. I'll fly through that since it's depressing. And then I'd like to make a thought on Chairman Rudd and the IMF style packages. Since I'm an extinguished professor, I'd like to start off with a red line that's pretty much close to flat. That's the world capital market that used to be. That reflects, if you like, you'd have to adjust it for your particular currency and project risk, but that's a reflection of the capital market the world has had pretty much since the end, late 80s. That's the reason we've had to move to floating exchange rates, because monetary policy has had no real impact given the elasticity of supply of capital for those at table two is basically infinite. We've had a world where monetary policy used to be a problem as financial integrations got very high. Central banks, helped by treasuries, have become far more disciplined. The last 20 years haven't just been a period of economic growth in China, the end of socialism, communism, 3 billion people entering the world market. That's true, and that's explained the profundity of the boom. But we've also had central banks and governments being far less destabilizing, far more stabilizing than in the past. We haven't had boom-bust central banking or fiscal behavior, with the distinguished exception of Robert Mugabe. So that world capital market has meant that in all countries, it's been very easy, regardless of the details of local banking, to get finance. And if a project is really rejected by the ANZ, he said indirectly you'll be picking it up through the maybe through the Bank of Prague. That's the way the world capital market has evolved. And it's been very, very, very nice. It has facilitated the sustained boom without the detailed planning. However, the same thing that gave us access to each other's pockets, and because inflation was low and predictable, real interest rates have been low, and that facilitated the surge in investment, which we've needed, because we're going from a communist low-income state, or an African state, or a state of affairs in China and India, well below the capacity of men and women to generate income, because we've got rid of the shackles of restriction. We've needed investment, and the market for capital has been there. So that's what happened. Unfortunately, that curve, that beautiful curve, has been replaced by the Viking, the vertical supply functions in every country, as we've now shut off the world capital market, because central banks and governments have been intervening domestically. And basically, we've now got a situation in each country of rationing of capital. And when you move from a market like that to a multiple rationing thing, the consequences are simply diabolical. There is no way. I've worked at the IMF, I've worked in the research department of the Financial Studies Division that looks at these things. I can assure you that there's no way you can build a functioning model of the world economy based on sort of credit rationing in each of the major places. Yet what happened, I talked to a guy who's running a very large infrastructure project 2 days ago in Melbourne. He's been told by the British bank that the British part of his credit line has been withdrawn, because the conditions of the UK banking support require that particular institution to not allocate capital overseas. As a result, that Australian infrastructure project is at risk. That's what's happening as each country replaces its access to a world capital market to its own sort of determination. And it is a frightening prospect. I can guarantee you, I got the same training as Ben Bernanke and so forth, which you could call a state of disability. But basically, so, and I know that I don't know exactly what to do now. I'm pretty damn certain he doesn't. So we are living in a situation where the policy advisors, the central bank, the governors, the advisors to ministers, are making it up as they go along. They know where they want to get to. That's back where we were. How do we get in this mess? Well, what I'd like to do is point out that the subprime bust in the US, the forced feeding of finance into lower income groups, and the Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac behavior and guarantees by government, that situation would have caused a recession in the US. But it would not have caused what we're going through, a global recession or worse. The 15-year boom with 3 billion people converging on capitalism, that has had a consequence of very little cleansing. Now, I'm not referring to ethnic cleansing, but fiscal, regulatory, financial cleansing of the kind that took place after most credit squeezes and busts. As central banks tried to manage economies, you then look at what went wrong, whether it was Reed Murray's in 61 or the markets in 87 and so forth. We haven't had that. There hasn't been the pressure on Treasury and Reserve Bank to clean up the systems in all these countries. And we've had a psychological or herd issue as much as an economic problem. If you've done well for 15 or 20 years, you are willing to buy the beach house. You are willing to take a bigger loan. You are willing to have, you know, to buy equities with debt, to have a margin loan. What also happened was a bunch of jockeys got together
and started working out some new instruments. One of them was called Credit Default Swap. And this sounds really boring. The trouble is, there's 60 trillion of these damn things in existence. And why did they use the word Credit Default Swap? Anybody? Because none of those words appeared in regulatory guidance or restrictions. The word insurance would have demanded regulation. You know, Peter Fitzgerald and I could start the 5-year-old life insurance corporation. We'd have a marvellous time until we're 90 spending the money, right? But we wouldn't be able to get away with it because the word insurance was used and we'd come under the insurance regulation, right? So that's what I'm saying. The word swap, credit default swap, was used because it didn't involve using the word insurance. It didn't involve using the word guarantee, which would have involved all sorts of regulatory constraints. And of course, the packages that resulted from this, basically, and people are looking mathematically, and they were mathematicians and brilliant biologists and so forth, sitting there looking at what determines the risk. If we combine this with that, and a little bit of this, and slice it this way, subject to this condition and that possibility in 15 different countries, across sexes, countries, sexes, we then have created an asset where we've got offsetting risk. It's also an asset that no bank director can fathom, that no treasury advisor can work out. So I can understand that anybody can understand. So when you ask your friendly bank director how much he knows about credit default swap, I bet he starts discussing the weather. Directors then shrug rather than ask questions. Remember, I'm not talking about a minor play. I'm talking about $60 trillion of one sort of liability. The world GDP is 50 trillion, or it used to be. The Chinese boom was no bubble. It's real. But past the parcel was coming. Yes, there were critics of leverage, but they did not flag this innovation, lack of regulatory protection. George Soros and others missed it. The swaps and derivatives industry then was understood by virtually nobody. What I do know is that the Myron Scholes, who was at Stanford when I was there, he got a Nobel Prize. But when he wrote an article in the New York Times a few months ago, back to back with Joe Stigler, there was no sort of understanding of basically what I call classical economics, which came out of moral philosophy and the Scottish Enlightenment, you know, David Hume, Adam Smith, and that group. Economics did really emerge from moral philosophy. But the finance industry, the finance theory jockeys, have come out of a discipline of mathematics and finance. And our business schools are increasingly teaching that sort of material and leaving out economics. I've been talking to my mate Jonathan Pincus about whether we should have a conference of economists session saying what's wrong with the economics profession. And I mean it. And I hope Steve might actually co-sponsor it. Because I think we have a serious issue right here. So we've got process-driven business schools producing people that are very clever at deriving instruments. So where's the policy dimension? So we've got a disjoint state, Greenspan, at the Fed. I've worked at that place. And you know, Greenspan talked about the banks having a spare tire. Didn't point out that it had no gas in it. Air, to use an English word. Greenspan thought this spare tire was fantastic, because what you do is you shop around. I talked on the beach before I wrote this paper, which you can get off the web for our Board of Governors. I walked along the beach at Anglesey with a guy who prepared the packages for John Elliott. This is in confidence for no need. For Elders Finance, when they were packaging, so they'd show up at NAB or ANZ and say, give me your loan portfolio, let's have a look. And then they put it in a category, right? And then they'd take it to those benevolent societies
called the Ratings Agency, Fifth, I mean, Standard and Poor's, and Moody's, and they've got some brilliant people. I've just worked on a project in Indonesia with Standard and Poor's. They're very good, but when they were privatized, which a regulatory body should not be, people could shop around as Elders Financiers. So they'd go to NAB or wherever, get their quotes for these various parts of the package, and then go somewhere else. And of course the ratings agencies would improve the grade in order to get the business. So the ratings agencies were in competition. And that's, I think, a matter that will no doubt emerge in the court. That who judges those who rank and evaluate risk? This is a question which is now highly political. The post-15th of September 2008 will be a benchmark. That was the day when the synchronized slumps really got going. When the United States said they would not bail out Lehman Brothers, then the flow-on crisis of confidence became very real, and we start to see the synchronized slump. Now, the way I like to summarize that, and what's unique about this downturn, is that we've had a wealth effect of about 30% plus. Tell me when that's ever happened in a short period before. For many people, that's the size of their house, if they're affluent. This is a very fair bust. You know, Twiggy's lost $9 billion, but he's still got one left. People are going to lose jobs. Low-income people are going to feel very insecure. And a lot of firms are going to suffer a lot of problems. It's going to be one of the most even busts in time. You know, Russia, Iceland, Ireland, these economies that have been geared up quite heavily are now going to go down. The UK economy has been heavily dependent on financial services. And when you look at my slides in a second, you're going to see that the picture's dramatic. I've been helped by Doug McTaggart here, who's the CEDA director and friend, and ex-Under Secretary of Treasury in Queensland. So here's what's happened to real GDP. The blue line is the UK. As you can see, the UK's rate of decline is I'm going to say sensational. It's not the right word. The green line is Australia. We're green in most of these pictures. Green's very popular these days. Blue, of course, is the bluest of economies is Japan. And this picture was a version of it in yesterday's Financial Review, which is quite funny because they compared JP Morgan's version of the graph with Westpac. But all you need to look at there is the big blue pictures. That's what balance sheets used to be for these various banks, like Deutsche Bank, third from the left, UBS, second from the right, and so forth. And the message here is that JP Morgan and HSBC were doing pretty well. But then that's in October. The version that's in yesterday's Financial Review is much gloomier. The point is, if I'd shown you a picture like that with the concept, with the two circles, with, you know, for example, UBS going from 116 to 46 billion in market cap, or Citigroup from 255 to 80, I think it's more like 20 now. If I'd shown you a picture like that a year ago, you'd have thought I was on drugs. Well, you need to be on drugs to enjoy those pictures, actually. Production falling in all countries. That's the US in red and the UK in blue. The most amazing one is Japan, that brown line. I've changed the colour for obvious reasons. They really have had enough. And we are still in green and looking good, but I don't believe a word of it. The brown line is the one to watch there. That is Japan, and Saul's given you a brilliant discussion of some of those issues. Japan is unfortunately living with the second bust now. The first bust is instructive because producer prices were
were deflating all through 70s, 80s and 90s. Real interest rates in the 90s were positive when you used producer prices to calculate real interest rates. This is one for Treasury. Right? Real interest rates, if you should you adjust by producer prices or consumer prices? Nice question. Ron McKinnon posed it a long time ago. Real interest rates in Japan, measured in terms of producer prices, were very, very high through the 90s. There was very little investment. Anyway, Japan is now copying it very, very badly. Australia will fall with a lag. This picture here, the green line, is work yet to be done. Doesn't look too bad, does it? It's a bad green, but the blue line is projects committed to. And that has unfortunately tumbled from 50 billion to minus 20. So we've got in the statistics of commitments in the future, a very depressing situation coming. The leading indicators, what economists use to, you know, the various things that have tended historically to predict well. This is the weighted average of those leading indicators in each of the countries. As you can see, the blue line for the UK is pretty bad. The red line is the US, and the green line again is Australia, which looked good until the last couple of months. At present, there's no end in sight to this. The leading indicators are all falling. And of interest is the collapse of these indicators has really only occurred in the last month or so. That's why it's happy to use Doug's figures, because he updated these figures about a week ago. Consumer confidence, not surprisingly, is also in trouble. The red line is the US, the green line is Australia. As you can see, our consumers, we're all gloomy. It's not a great day today. But compared to that red line in the US and the UK, the blue line, we're looking quite sweet. I've got a daughter living in England, works for Save the Children, and she thinks she needs Save the Nation, you know, they ought to sort of expand, because in the UK it is total gloom at the moment, because they're heavily dependent on the financial sector. The UK has been the world's financial engine for a couple of hundred years, and the chickens are coming home to roost this particular year with a bit of a vengeance. So retail sales, I'll finish with these pictures, in terms of, they're going brown, down, I mean, as you can see with Japan, and business confidence is reflecting all of the above. What do I think then of the Rudd package? Well, I can't be too critical, because the IMF has said that all governments need to provide stimulus. One of the problems with floating exchange rates is that when you have a fiscal stimulus, you get a currency appreciation, which tends to offset that. So in open economies, that's something we have to live with. Well, if all countries do stimulate at the same time, however, those currency effects will be offset. So I think Olivier Blanchard at the Fund is a good guy. He's saying that we've all got to do it. But there is a worry that when the IMF is very strong, telling people like Rudd that they're wonderful and doing the right thing in 2.5%, the IMF should also be saying, we've got to learn from this about the whole regulatory financial process. Capitalism has not failed. Instruments of finance have been manipulated, unregulated, unmonitored, and failed. That's not a failure of capitalism any more than your house is collapsing when the fridge breaks down. It's a serious crisis, particularly if you live in Victoria, where the fridge breaks down, but it's not the end of the house. It doesn't bring the house down. Similarly, financial derivatives that I've talked about and the ultra-leveraging, that's a problem which can be dealt with. The IMF should be focusing on that. And I think
It's true that Rudd's written a paper about all these things. I think he's actually gone over the top in terms of saying that we now need a new model. We don't. We need to use our own model properly. We need financial regulation instruments to be well managed. It is a bit scary that $68 billion is now committed when the pips have not started to squeak. Should we have done so much so soon? I'm of the opinion that we've done too much too fast. But I may be wrong, and I tend to respect Saul more than I respect myself, because he analyses the entrails of the economy endlessly, and I don't. The background then is that revenue is predicted to drop $75 billion due to corporate tax revenue. The government had a field day recently with its revenue from the minerals boom, China. And growth forecasts, we're only getting out of a recession. The trap is all caught it because of measurement issues and the stimulus. We are in recession, or else the English language has changed. The slump has not really hit. I believe we should be spending money on infrastructure and training and things like water projects where we know we need to do it. We know we need all sorts of things in Australia. Let's now prioritise those. Let's make them shovel ready, and let's shovel away some of the other discussion. Let's get focused on those. But I'll stop now because I think I've talked too long. I just want to remind you that I was in contact with Adam Smith the other day, and he's a moral philosopher, and he's very upset. Very upset at the misuse of his system. He doesn't hold himself responsible. He wonders why on earth we let them get away with it. Thank you very much.